Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 1th of December, Anno Domini 2012, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. There's got to be another ooze in there somewhere, and I don't know what it is.
Bring out the booze.
Bring out the booze. Thank you. Very much. Okay, we'll start with the Yahoo news. A new exploit being sold for $700 may put tens of millions of Yahoo Mail users at risk. Once victims click on a malicious email link, the exploit allows an attacker to steal and replace tracking cookies which remotely control the victim's browsing session. After the victim clicks the link, he will be redirected to the mail page again, a demonstration video for the hack explained. Yes, there are demonstration videos for hacks, and you can redirect him to wherever you want. According to Yahoo, fixing the exploit won't be nearly as difficult as finding it. That's because it's a cross-site scripting flaw set off by a URL, a hole that can be easily patched but hard to locate. Fixing it is easy. Ramses Martinez, Yahoo Director of Security, told computer security writer Brian Krebs, once we figure out the offending URL, we can have the new code deployed in a few hours. The exploit is being sold by an Egyptian hacker who goes by the hell and who's taken measures to make sure the patch happens later rather than sooner. While I offer it here for $700, we'll sell only to trusted people because I don't want it to be patched soon, the hell wrote. What's more, you don't need to bypass IE or Chrome XSS filter, he explained. XSS, of course, cross-site scripting. Krebs pointed out that cross-site scripting is when something actually looks like it's running on the site you're at, but it's really running somewhere else and showing up in a frame. Krebs pointed out that if Yahoo paid hackers to report bugs to the company rather than selling them to criminals, as some companies do, it might have been worth the hell's while to turn it in. If the vulnerability had been Google's, they would have purchased it for $1,337. It spells leet. When opening emails, users should approach links with skepticism and be especially wary of any links that come from unexpected or unknown sources. The Open Web Security Project lists XSS flaws like this among its top 10 application security risks. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, do you use Yahoo Mail? And the choices are, well, not after today. Yes, but I'm very careful. Yes, and I'm going commando. No, and hell no. See, the hell was the... Never mind. Nice. Anyway, thank you very much. So far, 37 votes are in. No and hell no are the top two. 16% of you said yes, but I'm very careful. 14% yes, and I'm going commando. And 5% said no, well, not after today.
This would only affect the Yahoo web mail. If you're using an offline mail reader, would it do it?
It's still there. It still shows up in as a link.
True, yeah. So we're back to the don't click links in your email. Click links on the website either.
Right. Just don't click links.
Don't click links, yeah.
And of course, and then when you're done with that poll, I know you'll have more to say. So if you check the yellow box underneath the poll, it will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
And the question there is, of course, what's your email provider and why? So far we have four... responses. And when you're done with that, come on back and chat with us. And of course, that's our question to you. What is your email provider and why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 1-800-790-0415. Of course, you can find all of those phone numbers on our website at soundbites.org.
Yet another danger on the internet, someone taking something good then corrupting it into something bad.
Yep, yep. They're finding, all they want is to find ways to get into what you have.
Yep. I almost wonder if traditional, I guess, physical crime is down because it's almost easier for to do cybercrime.
Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? I don't know how many. I mean, I guess it depends on the level of society you're at.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's
what sort of training and education you've had.
And that's the point you were making about training videos for these hacks. You don't have to be smart to do any of these cyber crimes. You know, you just buy a prepackaged hack and watch the video and do it yourself.
Those are called scripts, and the people who use them are derogatorily called script kiddies.
Those are usually the guys that get caught easily.
Yep.
But then they don't know where they got it. You know, in the typical, you know, cop show drug dealer scenario, you arrest the street dealer so you can go up the chain and get the big boss. Well, they literally on the internet do not know who they bought it from, and
yeah,
cannot
got it from a
go
website
up the chain.
From a guy named The Hell.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll put out an APB right away.
Yeah.
it's becoming more and more difficult to find an email provider who doesn't have some form of vulnerability. I really like what Google is doing with Gmail. They are actually paying people to find bugs. And they're paying more than the going rate would be if you found an exploit and sold it to someone else. So like The Hell, had he found that exploit on Google, certainly rather than offering it for sale for $700, which is really about all the market would bear, he could sell it to Google themselves for $1,300, which is a way better deal than near twice the money. So,
well, then he only sells it once. If he can sell it to a bunch of hackers.
Well, except that
each.
once it's it depends on whether the deal he makes
and how often it how soon it gets picked up by the good guys and found. I would imagine there's good guy hackers that will go and buy it for $700 to find it and fix it.
Well, that would be good.
Yeah.
Well, but like they said, the fixing the exploit itself is hard.
Yeah.
Blocking the site that's doing the exploit is easy. So once it's out there, they can figure out where that site is and block it.
Yep.
But then he sells it to somebody else, or they open up another site and another site and another site. So it becomes a leapfrog game, and I just don't want to play it.
Wasn't that one of the things on, was it the Code Red worm? One of the worms, there was an algorithm in the worm that generated URLs.
Yep.
And so the good guys couldn't block, you know, badsite.com because the worm was generating new URLs every day, and there was no way to find them all until the good guys cracked that algorithm,
right,
and then could look ahead in the algorithm and block the ones that were coming up next week.
Right, right, right. That's another thing I like about companies like Google. Microsoft is starting to do some of this as well. They have so much computing power that they check a lot of, they check against viruses, they check for cross-site scripting, they check for all that stuff, and they'll often just dump it if they know it's spam, if it's been blacklisted. But otherwise, even if it gets through, there's usually a warning on it that says you want to be careful of this one.
And so many people use Google as their search engine that you can get warned of viruses and malware before you even go there because it shows up in your search result. This site is infected.
Right. So there's a nice synergy that Google's actually doing. But Yahoo is one of the venerable places. You know, a lot of people have used Yahoo over the years, and it's very hard once you have an email address to change it because it becomes your identity on the internet. We see people who still have their AOL addresses, who got very upset when they lost CompuServe,
yeah,
addresses and stuff like that. So it becomes a problem. That's why a lot of places are selling inexpensive domains that are strictly for mail.
Yeah.
For example, .me. I have a friend who has his name, .me.
Yep.
So he can get mail at john@johndoe.me. And that's all it is. He doesn't use it for anything other than a mail place. But it's his mail place. Yep. He pays whatever, $10 a year, whatever, to own that domain name. And as long as he's the first John Doe, he gets it, right? Yep.
And ironically, .me is the former Yugoslavia.
Yes.
Google is stalled on me now, so I can't see what the current name of the country is.
Yeah, right.
But then there's .tv, which is the island of Tuvalu.
Right. And they're making money hand over fist, thank you very much.
Yep. And what's the other popular ones?
Because there's all the ABC.TV, NBC.TV. They're paying
a lot of web TV type shows, Twit.TV, .am and .fm.
Right.
FM is French Micronesia. AM is Armenia, I think. Yep.
But yeah, there's a you can at Wikipedia you can see a list of top level domains. And there's a huge number of them.
Montenegro.
Oh, Montenegro
is the new name, .me. So it's and every now and then we've had stories about new top level domains will get proposed, and then the ICANN votes on them. They're added the .name, I think, got approved. We talked about the .xxx that no one's ever going to use.
Yeah, right.
Because see, the problem is everyone knows .com, and so that's the first one you try, and so all legitimate companies have tried for .com, or they end up getting .net or something like that. And then every time a new domain pops up, well, if there's a .name, I want Kodak.name,
right?
Because so all the legitimate companies try to grab those domains too, so their own traffic can go there.
Right. It is interesting. I don't even know what the number of them.
You look for the also the squatters out there.
Yeah, that's
the squatters are always looking for the new names to the new dots to come out.
Yep.
And then try to scarf them up as fast as they can.
Yeah, I'm working with an outside company, and they wanted to get a we wanted to get a name,
mm-hmm.
a specific name. It's dead. There, I've looked back through the Wayback Machine, and there's never been anything there. They've mm-hmm. just never used it. They're squatting on it, and I thought, okay, if it's a couple of $100, it's worth it to this company to buy it.
Right.
So I wrote to him, and he said, yeah, $15,000. Oh, keep it. We're good. Yeah, exactly.
Write to him again, and it will be 20, because now there's interest.
Yeah, right. I wrote back, and I said, look, I can get... There was a very similar one for a couple of $100. And so I told him that. I said, if it was $2,500, I might have gone for it. But $15,000, because I can get this one, or rather for $250 or even $300, I might have gone for it. But I can get one that's really close for $200. I'm not going to go $15,000 for yours. Good luck selling it. Bye-bye.
Yeah, there goes your one chance of selling that name.
Yeah, right.
I remember years ago, I was at a customer site talking about this, and they were talking about getting a domain name. So now when you think of a product or a company name for your business, you can't just look at physical records. You now have to see if that inner name is available or not.
Yep.
And so just for a joke, I typed in StephenRay.com, and it said this domain for sale. But I was at the customer site. When I got home that day, in my personal email, hi, do you want to buy StephenRay.com?
Wow.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. So there must be some robot, finding everyone named Stephen Ray.
Right.
Of course, what's interesting is I have the same name and spelling as an actor.
Right.
Relatively famous.
Really? Who would that be?
Stephen Ray, yeah.
No,
he's always the buddy of the leading man.
Or the woman.
Or the woman, yep. Although in
no
V...
No wrong with that.
In V, he was third billing. He was the chief antagonist, I guess, because V would be the protagonist, right?
That's a very good question.
Tricky.
In that particular one. Yeah.
Yeah, is V the protagonist or the antagonist?
That series never took off, did it? What, did two seasons?
Oh, no, the TV series V, that was different. That was with Mariana Bakrain from Firefly. We were talking about that before the show. The leader of the V's was from Firefly. But, yeah, the movie V for Vendetta.
Jane, what's her name back in the 70s?
Jane, she came on playing the mom in the new series.
Oh, nice. Very nice. I know. A TV series with Marina Baccarin in it, and I didn't watch it. But, yeah, you're talking about V.
Yeah, V for Vendetta, Guy Fawkes story. Yep. Yeah. A modern take on the Guy Fawkes story. It was interesting. I've never actually seen the whole thing completely through, and whenever it's on TV, it's the same stupid spot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can get it on Netflix and
I know.
Everything else nowadays. I will say this, though. I the one thing that I kind of feel a little sad about is I missed getting nick.com by one day.
Yep.
Get out.
I went and looked for it. It had been sold the day before to a company called Nickelodeon.
You might have been able to make some money on that.
That I would have made money on because I had it legitimately. It's not like they could sue me and say...
Yeah, you're not a squatter. Your name is Nick.
My name is Nick. Nick.com. So I got nickf.com. But yeah, it was... It was. I missed it by probably 15 hours.
Wow.
Total, yeah.
That hurts.
Yeah. Well, oh well.
I remember when Exxon and Mobil were talking about merging, the squatters picked every combination of Exxon and Mobil they could do. Exxon, Mobil, Mobil, Exxon, Exxon, Moil, and just hoping that the big company would come along and pay for the rights.
Right. That's a kind of a crapshoot. Back in the early 70s, when the... New York subway system, when the New York Transit Authority raised their rates, they doubled the rates from a quarter to 50 cents. Yes, I'm old. We gambled, a bunch of my buddies and I gambled that they weren't going to change the tokens. And we gathered up all our money, made like $1,000 worth of tokens, and they did not change the token.
Wow.
So we doubled our money. It was really very nice.
Sweet.
I remember an old really MASH nice. Episode where they were changing the military money and... Hawkeye and Trapper played a joke on the other guy they hated, the posh guy.
Yep.
Made him miss the boat to get all his money changed and lost a lot of money.
And now they're talking about getting rid of the dollar bill and using coins.
Coins, yep.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. For no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. While you're dialing the phone, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, I'll read another news item. DRM, Digital Rights Management, or if you prefer, Digital Restriction Management, rears its ugly, malformed, malignant, cross-eyed head again. Despite the fact that, as Cory Doctorow so aptly put it, no one has ever purchased anything because it came with DRM, an ever-slimming number of content providers insist on punishing paying customers with idiotic anti-piracy schemes. Combine this malware with digital distribution that sticks the end user with an unfavorable license rather than, say, an actual book, and you've got another ready-made disaster. The Consumerist has the details on yet another paying customer dealing with DRM stupidity. It starts off with this physical analogy. If a reader had bought a paperback book a few months ago and picked it up to read now, the book's pages wouldn't magically glue shut just because the credit card she normally uses at the bookstore had expired. Obviously, no one would expect a physical book to be subject to the whims of the publisher the store was purchased from. A sale is a sale, even if many rights holders would rather it wasn't. But Barnes & Noble doesn't see it that way. Sure, you can buy any book from them, but you better keep everything in your profile up to date if you plan on accessing your purchases at some undetermined point in the future. A reporter at Tech Dirt tried to download an ebook he had paid for and previously put on his Nook a few months ago. However, he got an error message stating he could not download the book because the credit card on file had expired. But he'd already paid for it. Who cares if the credit card has expired? It has long since been paid for, so the status of the card on file has nothing to do with his ability to download the book. This is just one more reason to either not buy ebooks or strip the DRM off the ones you purchase so you can use the book you buy on all your devices without having to purchase multiple copies for no reason and have access to something you already bought when you want it. Nice work, Barnes & Noble, driving another person away from your offerings with your amnesiac point-of-purchase system. No one's purchase should be invalidated once the payment has cleared. Barnes & Noble got its money, but its customers out both money and a book. So our question, coming down now, do you strip DRM from your ebooks when you buy them? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800. 7900415.
Maybe you should tell folks, or is it as far as the stripping?
Not that kind of stripping.
How do you strip DRM?
Oh, I see what you're asking.
You're hanging around with him too much.
Ain't that the truth? There are a dozen ways to do it. There's software that will do it for you. I use a product called Calibri. which will read pretty much any format and save it as pretty much any other format. So by reading it in one and saving it at the other, that it strips the DRM off that way. And Calibri runs on everything. So if you own something with an operating system, probably even your watch, it should run.
I get this question a lot in the Mac community that we've got the iBook program on our iOS devices, iPad, iPhone, that we can read books on. Apple does not provide iBooks for the Mac. You can't use any Apple software to read an ebook on your Mac. So most people use Calibri.
Yeah. Yes, you can read it. It manages your stuff. You can read your stuff. You can send it to other devices. You can translate from one thing to another. If you write ebooks, you can use it to create an ebook. It's an amazing piece of software, and it is free, free, free.
Although now that I think about it, Apple has the iBooks author program to create ebooks, and that's free. I haven't tried
create
that.
Create ebooks in the iTunes store.
Well, you can create a generic EPUB and sell it anywhere, but you can also create an iBook specific
right.
And then sell it in the iTunes store. So that may be able to open and read EPUBs on your Mac. The usual answer is, well, don't read books on your Mac.
Well,
but now there's and there have been for a while now programs that do let you do that.
Well, I use it mostly to translate from one format yeah. to another.
So you buy your Mobi file from Amazon, and you can read it on your Nook tablet. What's the Barnes & Noble format? What do they use?
EPUB.
Yeah, EPUB is the generic format, the internet standard, but a lot of the stores have their own proprietary format as well. Apple's iBook format is based on EPUB, but it has a lot more interaction in it. So that's you can get some really neat interactive books on the iTunes store.
Right, but if you want to read it in a non-DRM format, you have to translate. For example, there's a program called Aldico, A-L-D-I-K-O. It's an Android. It's for Android. I don't know if it's for anybody else. But it reads EPUBs and a couple of other formats. But the problem with it is, it's non-DRM stuff, right? So if I want to, for example, I have a bunch of books that I bought from Amazon because I read everything on my Nexus 7 now. I have a bunch of books that I bought from an old series that I bought from Amazon. They did not have the other half of the series, so I had to buy that from Barnes & Noble. So now I've got half the series on one, half the series on the other. Both of them are DRM'd, so I can't move them to the other. But if I download them, run them through Calibri, now I can put them all in Aldico and read the whole series.
You're good to go.
In order. Well, of course, we here at Soundbites are not condoning the stripping of DRM from any products ever. This is merely hypothetical and conjectury.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, the one interesting thing about Amazon is they have made their Kindle reader available on virtually every platform, you know, mm-hmm. even your GPS device almost.
Yep.
So you can buy a book from Amazon and use it anywhere. But you buy books from Barnes & Noble, and it's really tricky to run it on other devices. I think they do have an iPad app, but I don't know if they have an Android app. They want you to use the Nook tablet. Apple... has their iBooks program, and if you buy it from the iTunes store, you have to use it on an iOS device. So it's interesting that Amazon seems to be the only company that doesn't care where you read it as long as you buy it from them.
Well, and that's nice, except they've been known to take books off of people's machines
yeah.
by themselves. Both Calibri, or maybe it's Calibre. I honestly don't know how they pronounce it. Calibri is the people who make lighters. So I'm not, it might be Calibre, but both of those links are Calibre and Aldico, or Aldico, or
it's Calibre. So you think Calibre?
Yeah, it could be Calibre, it could be Calibre. I've never heard anyone pronounce it, so I don't know.
Well, the founder's name is Kovid Goyal, Goyal. So, <Right. laughs> so we might be doing it completely wrong
both
ways.
Goyal could be Goyal.
Goyal, yeah.
Chris Wright tells me it's Calibri. I'm willing to believe him. That's how I've always pronounced it, but who knows? Anyway, we should probably go to the phones.
Get him to call in the show.
Call in and tell us. And then the doctor says it's pronounced caliber, but it's spelled R-E. I don't know. See? Now, maybe you guys should, we should sell tickets. You can duke it out. In the meantime, however, poor Joanne from Greece has been holding for a long time while we spew nonsense into the airwaves. Welcome, Joanne. What's your question?
Well, I was waiting. I probably already have got my own answer. But in a pop-up came up to renew some things, you know, to update.
Yeah, yeah.
One was the iTunes, and one was iCloud control panel.
Sure.
And that was the one that was checked off. So I looked to see what, because I do use iCloud. But the update supports Windows 8 and includes stability for performance improved.
Right.
But I'm not going to use Windows 8.
Well, it's the other half that you want to update for, the performance and the stability.
Okay.
When iCloud has had its issues, we'll just say, on every platform. And they've been upgrading it in order to make it more stable and faster.
And then this new version supports Windows 8, so that if you are using Windows 8, you can still use iCloud.
Okay.
iTunes 11 came out this week, revamping the entire interface. So,
which is about freaking time, well, thank you very much.
Well, it's different, so we're hearing a lot of complaints. With iTunes now, you generally see a list of all your files, in all your music, in list format. The new default format is icons of the album art. You can still go back to the list format if you want, but the default format is now albums.
So, yeah, there was that other box was iTunes version 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the updated one of those.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're using that as the music jukebox on your computer, or if you're also using it to synchronize movies and music to your iDevice.
No, I just put some stuff on my iPad and that's it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I don't really need
what
that.
What interests me generally is for most updates, there's a combination of good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, often enough, one of the things they're fixing is bugs. They're improving performance. They're making it more stable. But on the other hand, most updates seem to come with at least one thing that makes me crazy. You know, they've changed something somewhere what was the point of that, except to make it look different now?
Okay. So I should click on to update this iCloud.
Yes, yes, you should.
All right, that's good. I would not have guessed that.
There you go.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
Yep. And that's the other thing. Most of the time, the explanations as to what's being upgraded and why are written by geeks, which means they're written for geeks.
Yeah, it's so, clear as mud.
Yeah, we understand it sometimes after a while, but the average user really would look at that and say, oh, it's for Windows 8.
Well,
whereas if they said also for, well, they said fixes performance and stability issues, also adds support for Windows 8.
Yep. What really surprises me is she read it at all. But she must be a listener of our show.
Yes,
because she read it. Because the one thing we've been touting for years is read those messages, especially oftentimes the fine print. That's how sometimes the malware sneaks in, or the toolbars you didn't want sneak in when you download a program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good idea to read those messages and don't just get into the habit of clicking OK.
And that's all trouble. Too many folks are click happy.
Yesterday, I was looking at a piece of software for a friend, and it was a way to get Amazon books on your website for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
right. So I look at it, and it was either free or $99. I'm sorry, what? So I looked, and at one point they actually give you a complete comparison. And all of the things were the same except three boxes. Two of them were tiny little, you know, get a report, blah, blah, blah. Get those from Amazon anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the third one was
mm-hmm.
9 out of 10 times you get the credit for a book sold. The 10th time, the guy who wrote the software gets the credit for the book sold.
Ah.
And I
Interesting model.
On the other hand, it took me about an hour and a half to write my own. So, yeah.
Hey, don't like it? Write your own code.
That's exactly right. So, and I thought, you know, I could do the same. No, I wouldn't do that. But it is an interesting model. It's a way to get around having to put in ads or for somebody to sell it. You know, if your books are popular enough, everybody wins. You don't miss the 10%. And he makes a buck,
that's what
bunch
it is.
Of money.
It's 10%.
It's like agent fee.
Agent fee, yeah, where Apple takes a 30% agent fee.
Right.
Amazon used to take a 70% agent fee.
Yeah.
Until Apple came along at 30%, and then Amazon tried to sue them, saying that, well, that's wrong. Well, no, 30% is enough. You know, let the author keep 70%.
Right.
Actually, Rick, that fills in for me now and then, yeah. He just got an app in the App Store.
Nice.
Selling it for 99 cents, and that's usually the choice you make. You sell it cheap and hope to sell a whole bunch of them.
Yep.
Because you get your 30%, or you lose 30% out of it. Or you sell it high and hope that you make up the difference. So when you're pricing your software, that's a big interesting thing.
Well, yeah, and it does depend on the software. For a lot of people,
yeah.
That 99 cents is a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Much more than 99 cents when you really think about it.
It's got to be that app that they can't live without, and you know, or they're going to use a lot to get them to go the other side and pay more.
Right. I found one for my, called Acar, A-C-A-R. And every week when I get gas, I punch in the information and it keeps all kinds of stats on my car and mm-hmm. when it's due for this and that and the other. And I can track mileage and miles per gallon and all the crap that people do. And I used it. I'm using it, and I suddenly realized where that's really useful is if I go to sell the car.
When I was a kid, my dad kept a paper notebook of all of that information. So now I do the same thing. I use a program called Gas Buddy that does very similar. In fact, I read an interview with him, the author of Gas Buddy. He priced it at, I think initially it was at $9.99, and a lot of the comments were, $10, that's too expensive. So after a while, he dropped it to $4.99, and then all the comments were, oh, this is a really great program, and it's only $4.99.
Yep.
And then after a while, $4.99, that's too expensive. So then he drops it to $2.99.
And now he's getting this.
And he's getting, but and then he puts it back up to $4.99. And this, you know, it used to be $9.99, and now it's on sale. So
yes. Sale is the right word.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break just for a couple of minutes. But when we come back, we're going to be on sale. All the information we have will be absolutely free for the next segment. So feel free to call in 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you will be back with the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. So while you're calling 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, I'll be reading yet more email. Apple has been rumored to be prepping a streaming radio service for more than a year now, and according to a number of recent reports, it looks like 2013 will finally see the company's Pandora competitor become a reality. BTIG analyst Richard Greenfield on Friday issued a note clarifying that Apple's streaming radio service, he calls it iRadio, we don't know what it's really going to be called, will launch in 2013. The analyst points to obvious indications in Apple's iTunes 11 redesign in stating that this service's launch is imminent. Greenfield also believes that Apple's radio service will launch well before any television services that Apple may currently be working on. iRadio appears to be a product that will materialize far sooner than some form of Apple television product, which continues to be a work in progress, the analyst wrote. Greenfield continued, in August 2012, we revisited the Apple television debate, where we highlighted three key issues holding the product back: nationwide coverage, our managed services legal, and TV everywhere usage restrictions, as a follow-up to the April 2012 blog post. where we stated Apple's pursuit of television will take longer to come to fruition than investors are likely to expecting. While we believe that ISPs such as Comcast and Time Warner Cable and who are also video providers and all of that stuff stand to benefit immensely from opening up their API to enable a premium priced Apple generated user interface, we believe the product could take at least another year to materialize, if not longer, due to all of the aforementioned challenges. End quote for that guy. In the near future, however, BTIG sees upcoming streaming music service as an integral part of Apple's strategy moving forward. We continue to believe an iRadio product is critical for Apple to create a local advertising commerce strategy, tying together Maps, Passbook, Siri, and a new music service, which we are calling iRadio for now, Greenfield concluded. So, our question to you, we already have 11 dozen different streaming media services, apps for every station on Earth, including, by the way, Jazz 90.1. Do we really need another streaming radio service, even if it's from Apple? You know, worship aside, do we need it? So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And as everyone looks at me.
As everyone looks at Steve.
Yeah, there's already RDO and Smog and Spotify. There is an iRadio.com already, and they've been in streaming service for over 10 years. What almost is available now, it's not quite streaming, but anything you've purchased from iTunes, you can re-download from iTunes in the cloud. And it plays as soon as it starts downloading, so it's almost like streaming. With typical streaming services, though, it's basically a radio station and random songs come up, or based on genres or your preferences, and then a lot of them will let you buy the song from your favorite electronic song store. But the people have been asking about a subscription service since the days of Napster and Rhapsody, some of the older services, and what typically we see with the people is that there's types of people that like subscription services, you know, pay $8 a month for all the music you can listen to. But then when you stop paying the $8 a month, all the music you've downloaded stops working.
Right.
So that's one of the ways that Napster worked in the beginning is that you got two or three songs for free every month, and then you could buy songs to keep rather than just streaming songs to listen to. And Steve Jobs had said at several keynotes about the subscription issue is that people want to own their music. We don't mind renting movies, but we don't really want to rent a CD, a song. You know, we'll hear it on the radio and then go buy it.
Right.
So it's interesting. But what has always surprised me is that there are people that will pay for a subscription service and Apple's turning away money. So we thought
maybe they're not good at doing, by
right.
the way.
We thought maybe it was a restriction from the music industry, but then other streaming stations first started popping up too.
Right.
Although the problem there from the artist standpoint, there's a graph about Spotify. How much the actual artist gets paid every time the song is played is an incredibly tiny amount. And one of the things that Apple has been trying to do with the music industry is they've got agreements with the major music labels, but they also sell a lot of the independent labels.
Yep.
In fact, while major labels too, AC/DC came to the iTunes store recently, one of the last holdouts of one of a major band. So as an independent and even as a private music publisher, mentioned Rick Harrison again, he has albums that he wrote in the iTunes store as well. So pretty much anyone can sell their music, but it'd be interesting to see if Apple's going to do a streaming service too, because there's people that would do both. Sometimes I want to stream. That's the way I find new music.
Yep.
That was sort of how Ping was supposed to work. Ping was
right.
a technology in iTunes where you could, in essence, you could like, well, you can't like because that's Facebook. You could ping a song, and then your friends would see what songs you liked and could see that song too. Originally, Ping was supposed to tie into Facebook, and apparently Steve and Mark had a falling out,
mm-hmm.
Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. And that feature was taken out, and Ping is now officially dead and has been removed from iTunes.
Right. Interesting. All right, back to the phones. Mike from Greece, hung up because we waited too long. Sorry, Mike. But yeah, I listen to a lot of music, but I either stream stuff through Pandora because then I listen to stuff I don't own and I get to hear new stuff, or I stream it through Google Music, which is stuff I own, stuff friends own, stuff I bought, stuff I uploaded, stuff all over the place.
And I'm kind of the opposite. I hardly ever listen to music anymore because I'm always listening to podcasts, in essence, talk shows. I hate to think of myself, but I'm one of those guys that listens to talk radio all the time.
You're right.
It's just computer technology talk radio.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Bill from Webster on the line. Hi, Bill. What's up?
Hey, I hope you haven't answered this already this morning because I wasn't able to listen. But I just upgraded a computer to Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what you recommend to use for DVD and CD burning and listening software.
Well, all the same programs that used to work on Windows 7 also work on Windows 8.
You may need to update them, though.
Mm-hmm. You may need to update them, but all the same, what do you call it? What's the big one?
Roxio Nero. Yeah.
Is huge, and it is... it works on Windows 8. There's really two parts to Windows 8. There's the stuff that runs in the Metro or whatever they call it this week interface, which is essentially the start button.
Mm-hmm.
It's the tiles, and then you can switch back over to the desktop and run any standard software you own.
And it should be the software that came with your machine.
Well, a lot of machines don't come with burning software anymore other than just the Windows packet writing. You stick a blank disk in and drag files to it. Some people like what we used to call an authoring program where you actually assemble a CD in like Roxio or Nero. I just checked with Roxio, and Roxio Creator NXT is compatible with Windows 8. Probably can check for Nero also. But it's the... you may have to update the version you have to work on the newer operating system.
Yeah, on my XP machine, I use Nero, but I think it's like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
So probably have to be updated, right?
Probably, yeah. Mm-hmm. Check the Nero website, see what version is current.
I see they got a Nero and a Nero Platinum. Is there enough difference to warrant the cost?
They should have a list of the differences. It looks like the big thing with Nero Platinum is it can do Blu-ray.
Okay, so if I'm not interested in that, the other will probably do.
Probably got it.
Okay, very good. Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's one of the biggest things people have to remember when they buy a new computer or upgrade their OS. So if you're looking to upgrade to Windows 8 or looking to upgrade to Mac Mountain Lion, check your software, because a lot of software may not work, especially if you haven't upgraded it in a while.
Right.
A lot of people skip versions or, you know, everything's working, I don't need the version to upgrade. And in fact, Nero is up to version 12 now, so the caller missed 11. But if it's working fine, don't upgrade. And then suddenly when you upgrade your operating system, it's going to cost you $300, $400, $500, $600, depending on what software you have to upgrade. What we find a lot is since we sell a lot to the graphic arts community, Photoshop is the big killer app. Photoshop is a $700 app. And Adobe, as with most companies, only goes back one or two versions in compatibility. So the current version is CS6. So if you've got CS5, you're probably okay to upgrade to Mountain Lion. But we have a lot of people still on 4, 3, 2. I had a customer this week that had negative 2. Before they called it a Creative Suite, it was the previous versions. So we have to see there's CS1 and then CS0 and CS-1. They hadn't upgraded their software in like 10 years. And so suddenly they're looking at the latest Adobe Creative Suite is $2,500. So we found alternative solutions because they don't need everything the Creative Suite does anymore.
Well, and that's the interesting thing. Most people want to do things like get rid of Red Eye and you know, a few other
and
little bits.
It's Photoshop Elements for $100 is...
Or do it on the web for free.
Do it on the web for free,
software that will do that for you.
Yep. And a lot of cameras will do that built in. Or your editing software. On the Mac, you've got iPhoto. On Windows... does it come with a photo editor or photo viewer? We don't.
Linux does.
GIMP is the big one, editor for Linux as well.
Well, there's also the F-Spot Photo Manager and a half a dozen others. So yeah,
I think Windows does have some sort of a photo viewer manager program built in. But a lot of times that's enough for you, or it's a big consideration when you're looking at upgrading your computers, not just the cost of a new operating system or a new computer. You have to look at what software you use and if you need to upgrade that too.
Right. I just bought a brand new Chromebook, the Samsung Chromebook, for $250.
Did it come in?
Yes. Oh, I have a... I just... the hell with it. I just went to... On Wednesday.
Hang on, Henry. We'll get to you.
Yeah, Henry. We'll probably... I'm stalling because we really only have a minute or two before we have to go for the break. So we'll probably pick you up after the break. Please don't hang up. Just keep listening and enjoying the nonsense we spew. And then we'll be delighted to get you back on the air. But I went the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And I walked in and I said, I want a Chromebook. And they said, we don't have any, but we'll have them here by Monday. So I said, okay. And I paid my money, and they said, we'll send you an email. So I didn't go anywhere on Black Friday. Thank you very much. Sunday afternoon, I'm looking through my mail, and there's a thing from Best Buy. Your Chromebook is in. So I actually threw on clothes because it was Sunday. I was sitting around in my lounging pants, whatever those are called.
Stop.
Sweats.
Stop.
Sweats. Sweatpants. Sweatpants. And in my lounging pajamas with my smoking jacket.
No dress?
And I went down and picked it up. I have a friend who ordered one a month ago from Amazon.
Wow.
And it's still not in. I saw him the other night and I showed it to him and he was angry. I mean, he was angry. Not obviously at me.
Yeah, but...
I just went
probably a little bit at you.
But anyway, I was showing probably a lot more than a little bit at me. But I was showing it to another friend, and he said, "But you can't, you just took a picture and there's red eye. Now what do you do?" Well, there's online programs. I just threw it into one of those, got rid of the red eye, brought it back. He said, "You can't do that." I said, "I just did it. It was easy." And there's a lot of that stuff that's available on the web that people use fairly regularly nowadays. You don't need to own all those programs when you're doing the little stuff. Obviously, if you're doing something big, then obviously you need a big program. And if you're a professional, you need the $1,000 and $1,500 and $2,500 and $5,000 programs. But for the average mook like me, all I'm doing is getting rid of some red eye, you know, maybe sharpening up some contrast. That's about it. Why pay for something when it's free online? You know, it's easy, it's fast, and it's free. It's pretty cool. So that's the kind of thing that I tend to do there. I don't bother with the other stuff. All right, we are going to take a slightly longer break. Hopefully, Henry, you will stay on the line, please, and we will get to you right after the break. But we are going to take a break. This will give you a chance to do whatever it is you do during our breaks. I don't even want to know. But we will be back on the other side of the hour with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, of Steve Ray, of me, Nick Francesco, Henry from Brighton, who's on the line patiently waiting, and all of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we will be delighted, if not actually honored, to speak to you because it is 59 minutes after the hour. We're done with the first half of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and Henry has been... so patiently waiting on the line. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
No problem. Thank you for being there. When I was running Windows XP, I always used Zone Alarm as a firewall, and now I'm using Windows 7.
You took my clock.
And I've been told that it's not necessary anymore to use a third. third-party firewall, like Zone Alarm, because Windows has its own built-in
firewall.
Yeah, is that correct?
Mostly.
Yeah.
It depends nowadays. Zone Alarm still does a couple of things better than Windows does, I think, in particular on stuff going out.
Yeah.
As opposed to coming in. But it is getting rarer that you will find a real need for something like Zone Alarm.
I mean, they won't conflict with each other if I go ahead and install Zone Alarm.
Oh, they could.
Yeah, you don't want to run two.
Yeah, you have to turn off the Windows one if you install Zone Alarm. And it will probably do that during the installation.
I see.
Yeah, although, really, the Windows one is pretty darn good. I like I said, there are some things that Zone Alarm does better, but they're becoming less and less.
And with the built-in, if you've got the router.
Yes, the router has its own firewall.
That's pretty secure right there. So, you know, that in conjunction with the Windows, then, you know, I'd say you're pretty safe.
Okay.
As long as that one that you're using, the router, is password protected.
Yes, it is.
Then, yeah.
Another security question. I was attending a talk by someone who's supposedly knowledgeable about security, and he was recommending, in terms of antivirus software, Norton. I forgot what their package is called, but it contains
Norton 360.
I think so. Yeah, and it was mm-hmm. another one that he was recommending. But he specifically was saying that programs such as AVG and Avast mm-hmm. Did not keep up with new viruses sort of in real time. They whereas Norton and another third-party packages, you know, pick them up very quickly.
I beg to differ with him. I think, you know, AVG and Avast do just as good of job, if not even maybe a little better, than Norton. I'm sorry. We all get our own programs that we like. I'm not going to lie about it. You know, we all have our favorites, and I won't put any of them down. I like Norton now again, too. It's a good product.
Well, Norton had a problem for a while that it was really, really, really slow.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of people abandon it, but they've addressed that issue. But the other thing we're hearing is that the bad guys, when they're writing viruses and malware, they know about Norton too. So they won't release the virus to the wild until it gets past Norton.
Okay.
And then so it may take Norton longer to know it's there.
Yeah, I've been using a paid version for AVG for a few months now, and I just wanted to be sure that it was up to snuff in terms of comparing it to the other packages.
Right. Yeah, no, it's fine.
Okay.
They all usually the comparisons you see that treat all or that look at all the different AV packages, they all miss some, but it's usually different ones they miss, and they all catch most of them. Mm-hmm. We've started seeing that the commercial companies like Norton and McAfee have mostly moved into corporate, and the home users are using usually the free solutions. And quite often your internet provider gives you a copy of some AV suite when you subscribe to that internet service.
Yeah, they do, actually. I use Frontier's DSL, but I haven't been using their antivirus.
Right. One of the ones that actually somebody sent me an email, Donna from Henrietta, asked about Panda Cloud Antivirus. I have to tell you that I have looked into it some. I'm not done with my look yet, but it's cloud-based, so you actually have to be connected to the internet to run it. It runs from the internet. There's both a free version and a pro version for $30. And I tell you, it's nice. It's very light, very secure, very fast. And you know, like everything, it does more for the paid version than for the free version.
Yeah.
But they also update it regularly and blah, 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 blah. So I've been finding Panda to be kind of nice because it is lighter than all the rest of them because it doesn't really live in your machine.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually pretty nice. And, you know, let's face it, nowadays, how many people really have a floppy drive or something that they put disks in with? So all your
flash
software
drives are still
coming.
Common though.
What?
Flash drive.
Flash drives are still common. And in fact, there is a USB vaccine portion of Panda. So, but the point is, very rarely do we do any of that stuff when we're not attached to the internet.
Yeah.
So you're still protected. But yeah, I would stick with AVG or Avast or Panda. They're all good products. They're all very as secure as any other. And as Steve said, I think that Norton, McAfee, and that ilk are not as secure because, as he says, the big virus writers don't release a virus until it can get past them.
I see. Okay.
And even the fact that viruses themselves are on a downtrend, and it's mostly
spyware, malware,
and
maybe keyloggers,
spoofing.
Keyloggers too.
Yeah, you get a spoofed email from Citibank saying there's a danger.
Yeah, cross-site scripting stuff like that. Not from Citibank, but from someone else. Yeah, that was like that.
Yeah, they go after the big name services, Citibank and PayPal, and
yeah.
Yep. I got one from SunTrust, which is a huge bank in the South, where especially in Florida, where the population is relatively skewed senior. Yeah.
I got one from Career Builder the other day, which was kind of strange.
And, interesting.
Yeah. I notified Career Builder. They were grateful that I notified them.
Yep.
I was getting
I got one for myself once.
Nice. Well, I get those all the time.
Yeah, the support department at Jesse Group has determined you have a virus. Actually, some friends of mine, I've heard, are now getting cold calls. Because we've talked about this in the past. Someone calls you up and there's a virus on your PC. You know, if you look in this directory, there's an INF file. That's the infection. Well, a friend of mine got a cold call, and they said, you've got a virus on your Mac. And so the bad guys have expanded into the Macintosh now. I don't know if we like that or not.
You're right.
But yeah, so now they can trick you into buying AV by using the right words on either platform.
Yeah, it's and most of the time, what they're actually selling is, well, we'll download, go here and download this thing.
Give us control of your machine.
And give us control of your machine, and we'll clean it for $30.
Yeah, that's the worst thing, yeah.
Well, that's the worst thing to do, yeah, absolutely.
We get them doing it all the time.
Or I hate.
But the problem is, guys like you actually do that.
Yes. Yep.
And so, and it's legit, so how do you know? You know, yep. I mean, you've trained people to allow that to happen.
Or again, you know, they can call us back at our number, you know. Right. And
yeah. Yeah. And the big thing I see with TV commercials all the time too, and I'm sure Dave does too, is these free estimates. Yeah, we'll give you a free estimate. And okay, I'll give you a free estimate too. You're infected. It's going to cost you $100.
Yeah, right.
Or clean us.
And that estimate was worth exactly what I just paid for it.
Yep.
And or they'll do cleanups for this amount.
Yeah.
And they'll find all sorts of other problems, and it's going to cost you this much
more.
Yeah,
we did this cleanup, but boy, do you have other problems. It's like you go in for an oil change and all your brakes are bad. So.
Yeah, I need tie rods and disc rotors.
Yeah, yeah. It's balancing. All the same. It's all the same.
Thanks very much for the advice.
Sure.
Right, thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, we are seeing those scams a lot nowadays, and it pays to be a cynic, or as in my case, a curmudgeon. I've gotten a couple of calls like that. Your machine is infected. It is. Yeah, if you go into the Windows directory, really? Okay. Go into the Windows directory. I can't. Why not? I don't have a Windows directory. Yes, you do, sir.
It's on your C drive. Go to my computer.
Right. No, I don't. You have to, sir. No, I don't. I'm running Linux. I don't have a Windows directory.
Yep.
I'll create one for you if you like, and then I'll be happy to go into it and find nothing there.
Yeah, well, that's what they do. They tell you go to your Windows directory and find that INF file.
Right.
And say it's an infection. Well, that's really it's an initialization file that tells a program how to work right, and you'll find thousands of them on your computer, and they're all good.
You're right. Well, that's what they're for.
What we've read is that a lot of these cold call virus people are tech support during the day, and then on their off hours, they use that same list of tech support phone numbers to call out and make money on their own.
Nice work if you can get it, I suppose. All right, back to the phones. It's Joe from Cheektowaga. Welcome, Joe.
Wait for it.
What do you know?
Really? Wait for it.
Waiting to exhale.
Mr. Ray, I must say, thank you very much for the suggestion on alcohol. I had no idea that dissolved fingerprints so well.
You got to add booze to your opening line, Nick.
That's right, because it's useful for getting rid of fingerprints on your machine.
Yep.
Just be very careful if you have like little cuts on your hands. Do not get it anywhere near that. It will very much stink.
You find out very quickly. Yeah. I used to do that when I worked at Pizza Hut, when you had to get the hot peppers out of the tub. Oh, I didn't know I had a cut there.
Yeah, but if it's alcohol, it gives you a reason to go around suck it on your fingers. Yeah.
Not that kind of alcohol.
Yeah. Oh, why
not? It's isopropyl alcohol.
Oh, no. Yeah. Use Jack Daniels or one of those.
Some for you. Oh, who was that? Benny Hill did the sketch about Julia Child. You know, some sherry for the cook, some sherry for me, some sherry for this dish, some sherry for me.
Except that that's not really a sketch. She used to do that.
Yeah, she did. It's right up there with the Lucille Ball, you know, bits.
That's originally a Red Skelton deal, and she actually asked his permission to do it on the air. Yeah. It'll come to me.
How about this one? There was a lady who lives in Norway.
Wait a minute. Is this a limerick? And is it dirt? Okay.
No.
There once was a lady from Norway.
Her name is Lynn, L-I-N-N, and there's this tech blogger that blogged about her who wrote an email to him saying, what do I do now? She bought an Amazon Kindle used and then proceeded to buy a whole bunch of e-books. And then sometimes months in the future, all of a sudden, you know, tries to open up her ebooks and finds they're wiped from her Kindle.
Right.
And goes and contacts Amazon. Well, your account looks to be linked to an account we had trouble with in the past, and, well, we're closing your Amazon account. Have a nice day. Well, how can I appeal this? What the heck is going on? I paid for this. Sorry, that's all we can tell you, that you're linked to this other account, and we're not going to give it back to you.
Yeah,
this is totally ridiculous. I will slightly admit to a crime here. Way back when I bought some music online, I read the terms of service very carefully. I guess when they sold them, they figured they wouldn't be able to sell digital music unless you could write it to a CD.
Right,
you could stick it in your CD player and play it on the portable CD player or in your car or whatever. So what did I do? I said, oh, okay, write me a CDR. Then I extracted the audio from it and put it into my preferred format, which, of course, was Vorbis.
Sure.
It's like, I know this is against the terms of service, but, you know, what the heck happened to fair use under the Copyright Act?
No, there's no fair use because you are a criminal.
Yeah.
If the people who sell anything nowadays, music, books, magazines, movies, their base assumption is that you are a dirty, rotten, lousy, no-good, stinking criminal.
Guilty until proven innocent.
They have to do something to protect their poor, innocent, little snowflake-like selves from your dastardly being. And so that's their initial premise when they put out a piece of music.
And the DMCA and DRM fights with the backup provision in copyright law. You have the legal right to make a backup copy of something, but not if you break the copy protection on it. So because that's against the DMCA. So they two pieces of the law are fighting each other.
Right.
And I found the article about this woman on Boing Boing. She lives in Norway, and Amazon doesn't have service in Norway. So she bought a Kindle in the UK and was using it in Norway and buying books from a UK account. And apparently Amazon found out because you can't use the Kindle in Norway because Amazon does not have a Norwegian license, apparently, which is probably what it comes down to. They don't have a license to operate with the electronic book publishers in Norway. And that's what we see a lot of, too, in the iTunes store and the Google Play store, is that you have to get a license from every country you want to operate in order to be able to sell your stuff there. The European Union has helped quite a bit because then you can get one license for most of Europe.
Right.
But it's difficult to expand into other countries.
Well, I must say, I finally got December back yesterday.
Congratulations. We're thrilled for you.
On my tablet, you know.
Right.
They fixed that.
Yeah, I went and looked later that day, and my December was there, so they must have put out a fix probably while we were talking. They listen to you there, Joe. All right, we got to go. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Don from Hilton on the line. Welcome, Don. What's up?
Well, I was in the car when you were talking about these photo editing things.
Yeah.
And so I thought I'd call. I've had extremely good luck with a Corel program called PaintShop Pro. Now, I've done some comparison of it with Corel's Adobe, and I'm not Corel, but Adobe's software, and it's far superior to Adobe's Elements. It has 98% of what the Photoshop has, and it only costs, I think the most expensive I've seen it was $99.
Right, right.
And it does almost everything. I can take like three pictures of a group and change the faces or the hand positions and things, and I can paste together pictures and do all sorts of more editing than I know how to do, and I'm pretty good at it.
Right, right. And that's the thing nowadays. We hear Photoshop.
Yeah,
and that's almost become a verb.
98% of what Photoshop has.
Right, right. But we don't hear about it.
I have a program called Earfriend View.
I love Earfriend View. I love that program.
And I use it for 98% of my photo editing.
Yep.
And it's so much faster for viewing pictures than any of the other programs I've tried, including GIMP or any of the others. It's just so fast. So
yeah.
I just thought, and that's free.
That's free, and it reads dang near every conceivable photo format.
Yeah, and I can
ever.
Take out, I can do all sorts of corrections, and I can even paste together pictures. You know, I can take out red eye, do almost anything but skin smoothing and removing blemishes.
Right, right, right.
I just thought I'd comment because everyone talks Photoshop. And
yep.
It's thousands of dollars. And what they've done is with Elements, they've taken Photoshop and stripped out 98% of it and still sell it for more than PaintShop Pro.
Yep,
yeah,
absolutely true.
Yeah, Photoshop Elements is $99. PaintShop, they've got a $50 version and a $100 version.
Yeah.
But
and
when you get Earfriend,
the version I have does. I compared it. I took a look at some Photoshop software, and I couldn't find anything I could do on Photoshop I couldn't do on PaintShop. I'm sure there are things there, but I couldn't find it.
Yep.
Yep.
So
yep.
I just thought I'd toss that out. The only problem is I don't think they have a version for Mac.
No, I believe it is Windows only.
Yeah, but you could buy a Windows machine for that editing. And still be way ahead of the game for what you'd save on the software.
Well, that's exactly right. The other thing, of course, is that you can run Windows in a virtual box, too. It is an amazing piece of software. It really is. And I'm consistently impressed by it.
Yeah, well, I just thought, because I heard anyone, all the discussions were on Photoshop, and you know, the only problem I have against Photoshop is all the photo magazines show you how to do things in Photoshop, and you have to twist it around a bit to do the same thing in PaintShop from the instructions. But you know, because everyone does all the instructions in camera magazines
yep.
for Photoshop.
Yeah. Yeah, Corel does have Corel Painter for Mac, and they have a less expensive Essentials version and a higher Pro version as well.
Yeah, I didn't know what they had for the Mac, partly because when I retired from and decided to buy my first home computer, I found that all the software I wanted for the Mac was behind the software for the Windows version at the time and cost twice as much, so I couldn't afford to go with Mac at the time.
Right. But this Earfriend View, I'll tell you what, there's a plug-in for dang near everything.
Yeah,
there's a plug-in
yeah.
for Nero. So it lets Earfriend View burn slideshows to data or video CDs using the Nero Burning ROM software. There's an MP3 plugin that lets you play music.
Yeah.
There's one that lets you read PostScript files.
Wow.
What doesn't it do?
Well, the only thing is, if I really want to paint out some bad things and that sort of thing, I can't do it in that, or I haven't found out how to do it.
Well, there's a plugin called Paint that lets you paint lines, circles, arrows, straighten the image.
Okay. Yeah, I know I can straighten images. I do that. And I haven't found a way to change perspective.
Oh, yeah, that I don't know. There is another thing called Tools, and it just says it adds more tools. Uh-huh. So I don't know.
Anyway, I like it. I do have the Paint Shop Pro for doing real fancy things. But as I said, 98% of what I do is with EarFriend View.
Yep. Great product.
Yep. So I heard the other discussion, and I thought I would bring this up for people who don't want to drop their $1,200 for.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you.
No, thank you, Don. We appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
And see, that's the thing. There are so many available programs that are really kind of terrific, and all you have to do is know about them. And that's pretty amazing stuff.
Fractal, which used to publish the Painter program that Amazon is now publishing, their version 4 packaging was actually a paint bucket. It came in a paint bucket with manuals and discs. It was really, really cool. So it was probably interesting to pack that on your shelf, your computer store shelf. So you make sure you're in the right store when you see a paint bucket.
Yeah, exactly. There's a bunch of tools for Chrome. Like I said, there's Sumo Paint and Vector Paint and a bunch of others that are available. There's one, can't think of the one that I normally use. It's got some sort of bird for the logo, and I just can't think of what it is. It just doesn't matter. But there's a bunch of stuff out there, and if you're a casual user, and you want to do image editing, something like Sumo Paint or these other things, which I can't remember off the top of my head. There's Pixlr Aviary. That's the name of the company.
And there's a lot of similar Mac-specific programs. There's Acorn and Pixelmator. Graphic Converter. Graphic Converter started out as a graphic converter. It converts converts hundreds of formats into hundreds of other formats.
Well,
but then
you shocked me, sir. They,
which is interesting because that's how Photoshop started out.
Yeah,
and,
it is.
And they added more and more editing tools, and now Graphic Converter for $30 is a really decent editing program. And the Photoshop became such a big tool that John and Tom Knoll, the Knoll brothers that wrote it, eventually went to Lucasfilm. And so oftentimes you'll be watching the end of a movie and you'll see John Knoll's name pop up because, yep, you know, he does a lot of the graphics for all of the Lucas stuff.
Yep. Aviary actually has two versions, one for Google Drive and one directly for Facebook. So that's kind of nice. And generally speaking, you'll find that there are a lot of these are Chrome apps. So, you know, you go to a blank thing and you see the Chrome store there and you go there and start looking. And Aviary has a bunch of programs. There's just an amazing number of business tools and educational tools and games and news and weather, productivity, social stuff, utilities, entertainment. It's just an amazing amount of stuff, all of it free. So that's one of the things that's nice for me about a Chromebook. For $249, 99% of everything I do is free, and I can do right in this machine that doesn't have a lot of storage. Of course, the new version has offline stuff, so I've actually written documents and done all kinds of things where I had no network connectivity. But, of course, I can always create a hotspot with my phone if I really need it.
See, that's why we need Paul Casarino back doing his shareware gems every week.
We really do. I should call Paul and tell him.
It's hard to find all this software, and we love when people call in with software they use, because we can't know everything as much as we try.
As much as we try. We refuse to know everything.
Because then we're done. Just swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. From Hitchhiker's Guide. Right. He said yes and did. There wasn't all that much of it, really.
Yeah, right. All right, we're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to John from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, John. What's up?
Good afternoon. I heard your discussion about Photoshop and images and things like that.
Yeah.
I have a problem. I had a while back an old Kodak camera that took pictures in their proprietary format, and I think it was .kdc, something like that, but I've got a Macintosh, and none of the photos, I can't open any of the photos. I've got CS5, and I did some looking on the internet, and apparently you could open them old Kodak format with CS2, but then they discontinued supporting that.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if there's anything out there that would allow me to do it on a Mac. I heard you mention Irfan, and that was something I came across, but it's a PC
only.
That's
Windows only. Yeah, I would check out Graphic Converter, graphicconverter.net, I think they are, from Thorsten Lemke. That handles pretty much any format I've ever thrown at it.
Okay.
I'm looking to see what it does with KDC, if that's listed. But, yeah, that handles almost every format I've ever seen.
Okay. But there isn't a plug-in or anything that I could sneak into CS5 that would recognize
that. What type of camera, which camera model do you have?
The camera I was using, because I saved all the images onto my hard drive, and I don't know that I have the camera anymore. I believe it was a DC50.
Yeah, it's a KDC proprietary format. What we see sometimes is it sounds like that was an old Kodak format, and so the old Photoshops could read it. But then when they probably switched over to JPEG like everybody else, they stopped including that feature in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let me see. But maybe one of our listeners knows, and both Nick and I are Googling around a little bit.
Well, there's a thing on the Kodak site called the Picture Transfer Application, and there is one to download for the Macs, but I don't know what it ends up giving you. It doesn't.
That may just really be to transfer pictures from your camera to your computer.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it doesn't translate them to anything.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because it had a removable card on it, and it's the old compact flash card. And so I could read that. I could get them off the camera, but you know, once they were there, I couldn't open them with anything else.
I see I'm on Adobe's website, and they're saying CS4 and CS5 can read KDC as part of their Camera Raw plugin. So you may need to install Camera Raw. Raw is a format that a lot of higher-end cameras use. It's basically unprocessed.
Yeah, it comes up as a default when I'm going to open a picture in Photoshop. It comes up as Camera Raw by default, and when I open the folder that I know has those pictures in it, nothing shows up. And so I tried switching to other things, but it Camera Raw came up as a default.
You may
want to
see
that one doesn't work on this version that I have.
You may want to see if there's an update to Camera Raw that may have.
Oh, okay.
Well, see, now, it's an old format, so it should have always been in there.
Right. Now, what's interesting to me is I'm looking here on the web, and there are people who are arguing about whether or not you can open KDC files in Aperture.
That's an interesting question.
And
that's Apple's high-end.
One guy's saying yes, and the other guy's saying no, which leads me to think, because there's a third guy saying, oh, yeah, it will open them from this model of the camera, but not from that model. And neither of them are the one you have, of course.
One of the things that we often see with raw pictures in the camera is that some cameras include a JPEG preview as part of raw.
Right.
So if your app can't read raw, it will read the JPEG.
Okay.
So it looks like it's reading it, but not. So if this KDC has, and it probably doesn't, or your apps would be able to open it already, but if it had a JPEG preview, it may be able to open it.
Okay. And there is a difference, as I understand it, between the Kodak photo CD format and KDC, right?
Yeah, the photo CD is .PCD. Photo CD was an interesting format where you got a single format that contained multiple resolutions. The idea was you could have a thumbnail on your website, you could have a screen version, and you could have a print version out of a single file.
Mm-hmm.
But because you needed that high-res print version, each file was like 18 to 20 megs because all the formats were in there,
mm-hmm.
and it never really caught on.
Yeah, okay.
Now, it does say Kodak does have a thing that says how to open KDC and corrupted files.
On their website?
Is it kdcrepair.net? We got to take a break, but I'll have Steve will put this up on the site right now, and it'll be there in a couple minutes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have our friend Al from Rochester, New York, on the line. Welcome, Al.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Peachy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Hey, keeping kind of the topic going on the subject of picture formats,
the
gentleman with the KDC files. I didn't hear all of your broadcasts, but your InfraView apparently is two different plugins that handle that format.
Right.
But
this guy's
on
a Mac, unfortunately.
Pardon?
This guy's on a Mac.
Oh, but he might have a PC friend.
He might. That's right. All he has to do is bring them all over, get them converted, and bring them back.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely right. Good point.
Yeah. And I want to throw a plug in just for that whole concept because I had, years ago, came across a couple of floppy disks with digital files from Seattle Filmworks, which takes us back about 25 years.
Miski, you ain't kidding.
And I knew there were photos I was really interested in, and, you know, they got to be of the kids. And lo and behold, InfraView had no problem. It brought them up, and I was able to save them out to any format I wanted. It was a joyous thing.
Yeah, the guy who wrote that, Irfan something or other, he named it after himself, has kept it going over the years and built up just a ridiculous array of formats that he deals with. For a free piece of software, this is just an amazing product.
Oh, and like when I was faced with, I was faced with hundreds of photos, and this allowed me to do like a batch process, so I didn't have to do each one. I could just take them all as a one fell swoop and just bulk process them.
Yep, and then just walk away, have a sandwich, glass of milk, come back, done.
Made my life good.
Yep.
Hey, one other item, just because I can't let it pass, but the one gentleman you had call in commenting about the merits of CorelDRAW versus Adobe.
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to contest his statement that Elements only has a small fraction of the power of Adobe, full Adobe Photoshop. That, in my experience, that's not true. There's really, it's the other way around. Elements seems to have about 95% of everything I need to do.
And that's sort of the marketing do it. That Elements is more marketed toward home users, and the full Photoshop, which is $700,
mm-hmm.
Is marketed toward graphic professionals, you know, Time Magazine, you know, photo editors and things like that.
Yeah. Well, I don't question the power of CS4 and 5 and 6.
Yep.
I mean, they're just incredible, but there's a big learning curve, and Elements does make it a little bit easier.
Yep.
But I'd also mention that, oh, by the way, there's a local office supply store that was a week ago selling Elements for $50.
Yep.
And Elements plus the Video Premiere Suite for $75.
Yep.
So,
on the other hand, I mostly use the GNU Image Manipulation Program, GIMP, GIMP.
Uh-huh.
And that does way more than I will ever need it to do.
I hear
and that's free.
It's gotten the case with so many programs in this PC world. More power than you know what to do with.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And that's one of the things. That's one of the nice things about products like IrfanView. He's kept it really simple. It does an amazing amount of stuff, but it's all pretty accessible and pretty easy to do. You start getting up into Elements, it's a little harder. GIMP, it's a little harder. Photoshop, you better take a class. But all of them do amazing things.
Well, that's my spiel. So thanks again.
Thanks, Al.
Take care, guys.
And like I said, the online stuff tries hard to be very easy.
I used to teach Photoshop class for one of the local training centers, and it was a two day all day class. And day one was learning how to select.
Yep.
All day learning how to select, because day two was learning how to edit your selection. And so you've got the lasso, you've got the marquee, you've got the magic wand. So you have all these different ways to select. Do you want to select on the current layer, the background layer, the foreground layer, the front layer? And at lunch after on the first day, one guy came up to me and said, "When are we going to learn how to use Photoshop?"
Yeah.
Well, we are learning how to use Photoshop because you select your stuff and then you change your stuff. So
yep, exactly. Right.
So change. The big one is put someone else's head on someone else's body. We have to learn how to select just the head, not the background, not the foreground, not the fiddly bits around the hair. So selecting in Photoshop is a huge, huge
yeah.
deal. And the Photoshop wizards really know how to select just the bit they want.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Before we go back to the phones, I do want to remind everybody that tomorrow we will be in Second Life. 6 p.m. Linden time, that's 9 p.m. Eastern. Come and join us. Find Neil Infinity, N-I-H-I-L Infinity. Send me a message and I'll teleport you in. We spend an hour or so in there chit-chatting, answering questions, talking about movies, whatever suits our fancy. It's just fun. And now, apropos of absolutely nothing I've just said, our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. Hiya, Scott. What's up?
Yeah. my wife has sent me during the show a file to open that she couldn't open on her Mac.
Oh.
I can't open on my Mac. The end of the file is ASPX.
That's an
and
active server
she
page.
She said she needed this file because she's trying to save some money on some website where she was shopping.
That's a piece of a website. That's an active server page.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like HTML is for standard Apache-type web server. ASPX is for a Microsoft ASP file. It's an executable ASP file.
Yeah, apparently she downloaded it for the file to copy, so
right.
Maybe we need to go back and the web page she was working to find the actual thing she needs.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly what you have to do.
We see this happen frequently. Yeah. She needs to run the ASPX in her browser to get to the real file, so that the code in that ASPX says is supposed to tell your browser to download the file.
Well, when I click on it, and I mean, she's mailing it to me because she couldn't do it. It says there's no application to
right.
open it.
That ASPX file has to run on the web server it came from. So you run it in your browser, so it runs on the server, and then it sends your browser the actual file she needs.
I understand. All right, thank you.
There yep. you go.
Right, bye.
Bye.
Yeah, we see that a lot with you're supposed to click here to download a file. Well, I always like to right-click and save it so I can see what
yep.
I'm doing before it happens.
Yep.
But a lot of times you can't do that because clicking here doesn't download the file. Clicking there runs a script that tells it to download the file.
Right, right.
But
right.
I don't want to run the script. I want to see what file I'm downloading.
Yeah. yeah, we're finding that happens more and more. I'm not entirely certain what the advantage is to that. I suppose it lets them hide where that file is kept so you can't download it without going through their page. But so what? They're letting you I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Doesn't make any sense.
All right, back to the phones. Dennis from Rochester, New York, on the line.
Hi, guys. I just need Steve to put a link up on you know, where you guys put stuff from each show. Because, Nick, you keep talking about a photo imaging or photo editing program that's a little simpler than GIMP, and you keep saying it, but I don't know what it is. And it's sort of, you either got to spell it or put it up as a link. If you could.
Yep. It's on the Soundbites website. If you go to soundbites.org.
No, I understand that part. I want the particular program that you're talking about.
Right. And if you go to soundbites.org.
Yep.
If you look across the top, you'll see home, contact, links, FAQs, forums, calendar, shop, the tabs. If you click on the links tab, sixth one down?
Yeah, the sixth one down
is the list of sites mentioned weekly on the show. And they're listed by date. So the top ones will be today's stuff. So far, we've looked at 9 different websites. And the fifth one down, yes, is IrfanView, the photo editor.
Okay, I apologize. I was already looking at the link, but either that wasn't up yet or I missed it. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, it doesn't automatically update. You have to keep hitting the F5 key when we say it'll be up in a second.
That's all I need for today, guys. Thank you.
That's all you get then. Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, it's all there. It's just there's a lot of stuff. And so that's the way that works.
And quite often we talk about the same programs week after week. So if you look at the other list, which is the alphabetical listing of everything we've talked about.
Yeah, you'll probably find our Irfan view in there 3, 4, 5 times probably.
Yeah, at least 3.
Yeah, well, we have over the years talked a lot about Irfan view because it just keeps getting better. There's no way around it. Irfan, whatever his last name is.
October 12th, 2001, the links go back to.
Yes, they do. Yes,
we've covered a few programs.
Yeah, more than just a couple. And the show was on for an awful long time before we started doing that stuff.
And we've had some folks, though, say, do you have the old shows from back in the 80s?
I may have some of them somewhere, but I didn't start recording them for a while. For them.
Jerry thinks he might have a few of them, and he was looking through his archives.
Believe it or not, when I moved from Brighton over to Arundicoit, I used to have, it had to be about 24 of the cassette tapes, and I'd tape a show on either side. And Lori goes, "You don't need these anymore, do you?"
Of course I do.
Oh, they went.
And you actually said, no, I don't?
He probably
said yes. isn't that what wives do? Is they throw it away anyway?
Yeah, well, exactly.
I love you, honey, but stop throwing away my stuff.
Notice she didn't say, do you need these anymore? She said, you don't need these anymore.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. So I get that. All right, that's it. We're done. Stick a fork in us. This week is over. I want to thank every one of you who called in. Those of you who did not call in, I don't know why not. We're easy to talk to. Feel free to call in at the standard numbers, 585. I don't even have to give them out. The show's over for the day, for Pete's sake. But thank you all. Check the website. Vote in the poll. Do all of that cool stuff. We're gonna take some time off this week and just sit around with a few. Yeah, that'll happen. In the meantime, George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. So sit back and listen. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.